Blog Talk Radio.
Do you lie awake at night wishing for something better? When you look at your future a year from now, is there a light at the end of that tunnel? Do you feel like you were meant for something more? Opportunity will not come knocking on your door unless you're out there looking for it. How do you do it? Our guests on the Empower Radio Show will be sharing their secret to success. We'll be bringing you authors, speakers, entrepreneurs from many different fields who come from various backgrounds. They will be sharing their stories of success and of early failures. You'll hear about the challenges they faced when they launched their ideas and the creative ways that they overcame obstacles. Our guests will inspire you to find your way down the path to success in this ever-changing world. Jump on board and become empowered.
Hello, welcome to the Empower Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. I always appreciate when you stop by and spend a few minutes with me because I know that time is that commodity that we just can't get back. And if you spend a little time with me, I really appreciate it and acknowledge that it's a huge sacrifice, especially for those entrepreneurs out there that are building their business. Be sure to check out our website, our webpage. We've got a Facebook page. We've got a Twitter account. Be sure to follow us, and that way you'll be notified of all of our speakers and our guests. We've got some great guests that I think you're going to find will inspire you in a lot of different areas. So be sure to visit And if you have any topics that you would like for us to address here on Empower, be sure to do so. Well, I'm your host today, Linda Ballesteros, and I have a great guest for you today. I actually met our guest several years ago, and I knew there was something special about her then, and I believe that it was actually before this life-changing event happened to her. Today, my guest is Deborah Fisher, and she is an author and a speaker. And I tell you, she is someone from an early age, she understood what it meant to be blessed. And you can tell that when you're in her presence. In her recent book, Now Is Your Time, she actually shares her story. And this is a story of her personal afterlife story. So if you've heard of near-death experience, if you've heard of people who have experienced had an afterlife episode or an experience that may have changed their lives, then you're really going to be interested in hearing Deborah's story. So please join me in welcoming Deborah. Deborah Fisher, how are you?
I am super happy and blessed to be with you today, Linda. This is really an honor and a privilege, and I do not take it lightly. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, absolutely. We're just so excited to have you because I love to interview people. You know, the show is called Empower Radio Show. And, you know, I interview business coaches to help people empower their business. But I also love to interview people that can help us, help empower us in our personal life as well. Because I tell you what, life can be tough out there and it can be quite a struggle. And just to know that there is something more than what I'm seeing right here is all it, sometimes that's what keeps me going every day. Now, Deborah, I know that you spent many years as a nurse and you're, you know, currently working with individuals that want to change their financial future, but you're here today to talk to us about your book, Now Is Your Time. Now, what does the title of your book mean to you?
Well, what it means to me literally is what it's saying. All we have is today. All we have is now. We're not promised this evening. We're not promised tomorrow. And all of that became more of a focus for me back in the early 2000s when a thought came into my head, if God had a watch, what would it look like? And I knew he was asking me a question, so I said, well, it wouldn't have hands, it wouldn't have numbers, it would just say the word now. And so the message to me back then was, now is the time. Now is the time that the things that I'm asking you to do, the things I'm calling you to do, the things that are in your heart to do, now is the time to do those things. And so I began to have a very strong sense of the word now, and just started to just live more in the now of the moment of my life. Because I knew I wasn't
going to have the next thing. Right. And, of course, that became very clear when you, oddly enough, thought you were taking a vacation that you had been gifted. So tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, I moved to Texas about 2 years ago, and in a company where they like to reward their people, their company people, with presents and gifts, and I had won a cruise. I was excited about that. We had started helping a lot of people get financially free, and we were excited doing that just all on its own because we really feel called to help and serve people. And it's like our mission. And so anyway, we found ourselves winning this trip. We were tremendously excited. The only thing was is that it was in December, and I began to have flu-like symptoms. And being a nurse, I just thought, well, you know, I'm just going to, you know, take me some over-the-counter medications. I worked really hard for this trip. I don't want to miss this trip. I don't want to lose it. And so I went aboard not feeling 100%, but believed, you know, with my over-the-counter medications, I would be okay. And just the opposite happened. I did not get well. I got worse, and I almost died. So it was a very awakening experience. I just continued to get weaker and weaker every day. It got to where I couldn't sleep at all. I had developed a cough. When I laid down, it would hurt my chest to lay down, and not ever having like pneumonia or any kind of pre-medical history of any kind of lung problem. And even as a nurse, I was so puzzled. It's like, what is this all about? I really couldn't even figure it out for myself. But Wednesday and Thursday came, and things just got darker and darker. It would be like if you were in a room and with a light and the dimmer switch, and someone was turning down the light, turning down the dimmer, making the room darker and darker. And I began hearing scripture, like I began hearing Job and his wife having a conversation, like, curse God and die. And Job saying, no, blessed is he that gives, you know, who takes away, blessed be his name. And I realized that I was in the valley of the shadow of death. And never having been there, all of a sudden I was realizing that's where I was, because my lungs were just being infiltrated by what I really don't know. I still to this day don't think the doctors really know, because I got three different diagnoses. One going into the hospital, one after the day I was discharged, and then when I got home to a lung specialist. But definitely knew that the lights were going out and that I was not in control of it, and there was nothing that I could do.
Now, Deborah, this certainly ended up being anything less than a relaxing vacation and the cruise that you had anticipated beforehand, because at some point you left the ship and were in a hospital in Mexico. Is that right?
Yes. Like I was saying, Thursday, we had gone down to medical Thursday morning, and we found out just to see the doctor on the ship was going to cost $140. And being very practical, I could not see paying $140. And so I just ordered a small bottle of cough syrup, thinking, okay, just this will tide me over. You know, pretty soon we'll be headed back toward the States. You know, I will definitely go to the doctor when I get there. Well, Thursday night, it just got worse into Friday morning. Friday morning on the 20th of December, 2013, is when I experienced the valley of the shadow of death. I told my husband, I was standing at the side of his bed in the cabin. You know, those cabins are pretty small. And he said, what's wrong? And I said,
pretty
I'm
strong,
dying.
Yeah.
And he said, well, he jumped up. He was scared. Well, we're going back down to medical. I don't care how much it costs. And, of course, we didn't care how much it cost at that point. When we got down there, first thing in the morning, doctor took an x-ray, and he said, Ms. Fisher, I do not even know how you are breathing and how you are alive right now. So he put me on oxygen, gave me some medication to, you know, calm me, ease me, ordered an ambulance, and we were taken off the trip, left in Cozumel, Mexico, at a local hospital, and about an hour later, the ship sailed back toward America. So there we were in Mexico, and pretty much just at the mercy hands of those who were trying to help me. But the message that we were getting from everyone was it didn't look good and it didn't look like I was going to make it. And then I believe just by divine intervention, the liaisons between the United States and the Mexican hospital there arranged for me to be airlifted out of Cozumel, and around 11 o'clock that night, I was airlifted out. There was some commotion before that. It was kind of a horrifying place to be in. We didn't speak their language. They didn't speak our language. Several things I mentioned in the book that the experience was not a good one. But we were airlifted out. We did arrive in San Antonio because that's where the air medical was based. And I accredit my life being saved to the paramedic in the RN that actually got me out of Cozumel and basically gave everything to me that I needed to make it to San Antonio. The we got there probably about 2:30 in the morning, so now we're looking at I guess December 21st, and the administration, the ER doctor, came in, and he admitted me and basically ordered me immediately to ICU, and this was in the morning, so several hours later he came back. He called my husband out of the room, and as a nurse, when a doctor usually calls the spouse out of the room, that's usually not a good sign, and so he showed him my x-ray and said that he didn't think that I was going to make it. He said when he left earlier that morning, he said he went home, he couldn't sleep. He basically just prayed because he thought that in a few hours when he came back on his rounds, I was not going to be there. So it was pretty serious, and they were talking about life support and this and that, and basically they just basically hooked me up to everything, gave me everything that they could, and so I spent 10 days in ICU. And during that
let me ask you this. During all of this, were you fearful? Did you really understand how serious it was? You know, when you're facing death and when you see that on the people around you, that how serious it is. How did you respond to that in the moment?
Well, I think I was in a place of shock and denial. At first, I have a lot of faith, so I'm not afraid to die per se. But at the same time, I was pleading for my life because I'm still young and I didn't want to die. My first granddaughter was pregnant with my great-grandson, who I'm actually visiting, sitting in his room right this second. He's off with his other grandma today. But, I mean, I was pleading for my life. You know, I was pleading, please don't let me leave until I get to meet Bryce, and I want to see him grow up. And I'm just going to let you know, Father, I just think it's too soon. So, but, I mean, I was going through the valley of the shadow of death where my oxygenation levels were decreasing to where it would seem like the lights are going out, like the lights are being dim.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I was, when a doctor called Joseph out, my husband, out of the room, another young doctor came in, and I write about him in the book, and he seemed very direct, and he said, he walked in, and his bedside manner was not quite what it needed to be, but now that I look back, he was just in a place of urgency, you know, and he said to me, he said, do you have a living will? I said, yes, I do. And he said, so you want all measures taken to save your life? And I said, well, yes, of course. And he says, well, we probably are going to have to put you in an induced coma and put you on life support and put an NG tube in to feed you. And I was, that's when it really hit me that, wow, this is pretty serious. And because they were indicating to me that I wasn't going to be able to breathe. And so they were going to have to breathe for me. And as a nurse, that's, I know, for my patients, that is very traumatic. When,
right.
say, if you're in a bad accident and you wake up and you have a, you know, a respirator inside your body, it feels like you're suffocating. It's very tremendously scary. And so that's why they keep you highly sedated. And I already knew all this. So it was like, and I told him, I said, well, I don't want that. And he says, but you don't realize how close you are to death. And so that's when kind of the lights went on a little bit more for me to realize how serious of a condition I was in. And so naturally I looked at him and I said, look, do whatever you got to do because I want to live.
And, you know, I think that we all have that desire to live. And at some point, you know, it does make itself known. But
yes.
Tell us a little more about, you know, I know that you actually had experience, spiritual experience during this particular time when you were probably very heavily sedated and when, like you said, things seemed to be getting dark. And tell us a little bit about that experience, because I believe, Deborah, that you experienced this to share it with others. It's not just about us going through something. It's when we go through it, and they say the only way through to get through the fire is to go through it. And that's what you did. You actually went through it. But on the other side, it's about sharing that experience and sharing that message. So for the audience out there, can you share a little bit without giving the whole book away? Because I want our audience to certainly get a copy of your book. But share a little bit about what you experienced during that time.
Okay. Well, fortunately, they decided, okay, since she's so scared to death to be put in a coma and to be intubated and be on a respirator and have a machine breathing for her, they said, okay, we'll try CPAP. Now, CPAP, you know, shouldn't be as daunting as a respirator is, but it was for me because I have a slight case of claustrophobia. I don't know where in my post-traumatic stress life that comes from, but they put CPAP on me, and it was a definite battle for me. And this is all in the book, but of course, it was a better alternative than to be sedative, comatose, you know, and being on a breathing machine. Because at one point, if you're not getting better and you have a living will, and it says that, you know, if things are not turning out for you, you're going to have a quality of life, then the family is faced with unplugging the machine. And, of course, my husband wasn't up for that, neither was I. And so it was during, I think, the first or second night. I wish I would have written the night down, but like you said earlier, they were keeping me very well sedated and relaxed so that naturally I wouldn't have any anxiety. Anxiety brings hyperventilation, which is definitely anti-against breathing. And so I was being kept very tranquil, and was trying to sleep. And as a nurse, as a positive type person, I was basically coaching myself through the nights. Seemed like the nights were the hardest to have the CPAP machine on, saying, you can do this, you have to do this. You know, you've got to do this to get better. But to also help myself cope, I would take that mask off just to get it off of my face to not feel like I was suffocating. But soon the machine would begin to beep, which would alert the staff that my mask is off. So I learned quickly how long I could have the mask on and keep it off. Keep it off and put it back on. But during these episodes, a very strange phenomenon began to happen, and that was I kept being awakened by a pair of hands. And every time I opened my eyes, there was no one in the room. And surely I thought, well, it was the respiratory therapist there to give me a treatment, or the nurse there to get my vital signs, or someone there to give me a pill or take me an x-ray. These hands felt so real when, like, if you were asleep and someone came and laid a pair of hands on you, depending on if you're a light sleeper or not, eventually you would wake up to see who's touching you. And that happened several times. And so I thought, okay, am I hallucinating because I am on a lot of medication here? I don't understand what is going on. And I began to pray, what are these hands? What are these hands? And I was going in and out of sleep and struggling with the CPAP. And upon feeling the hands again, this time when I woke up, there were angelic beings at the foot of my bed. And not only were they at the foot of my bed, but they were surrounding my bed. And I felt like I was in my room, but I was no longer like in the room. Like the bed, me, I call them angels, we were in a different space. The room was there, but we were like above the room, if that makes any sense. And not only that, but I heard like a very whispering, excited type of conversation, commotion going on behind the angels. And the angels had no wings, they were tall. I go into great detail describing what they look like in the book, so I won't mess that up for anybody. But I was like, I saw them, but I was more like curious about like who else was in the room. And because the angels were so tall, I had to lift myself from a laying position to a sitting position to try to look over their shoulders, between their shoulders, and I saw two women. And then I laid back down, and I was in a tremendous amount of peace and went back to sleep. And it lasted, I would say, seconds. And then the hands came back and woke me up again. And so, and it wasn't just one pair of hands. It was like there were several people in the room laying hands on my body, on my feet, on my head, on my arms, on my knees, on my leg, on my stomach, you know, on my shoulders. And it was just very odd, because every time I woke up, no one was in the room, and I actually began to get frustrated, like, what are these hands about? So I was praying and just coping and trying to sleep, and eventually, if you want me to go there, the answer that came to me was, these are the hands, the spiritual hands, of those who want to be at your side, but they can't be. And they're praying for you, but their hands, like spiritual hands, are coming and being laid on your body so that you can be healed. So because my daughter and my son couldn't be at my side, they lived in two different states, and they had prayer chains going all over the place. And naturally, I know when people ask me to pray, there's a lot of times I don't know the people I'm praying for, but I'm intently praying for their sons or their daughters or their grandchildren or their babies or their spouses. And usually I pass those on. You know, I say, please pray with me because I want people to be healed. And so what I felt like my Heavenly Father was telling me is that when we're in places of desperation like this, and when we're, say, maybe getting ready to cross over, spiritually, we can be places, our spiritual hands can be places to go lay hands on people so that we can bring healing to their body. If it's not their time, we can bring them into a more of a healing place so that they can still be here and be with us. But I also
I really feel that what you're saying is something that I truly believe, and that is that we're all connected. It's like a web, and energetically or spiritually, we're certainly all connected, and it's a very real connection. You experienced it. You felt it.
Yes.
All of the prayers that were going on, I am sure that you were on many prayer chains. And that, like you said, there are people that didn't even know you, but they were still praying for you. So, you know, folks out there, when you talk about the power of prayer, don't take it lightly. You know, Deborah's just explaining this experience that she had. And you don't have to be a religious person to pray. Just being a spiritual person or just sending the person that's in need, just sending them good healing thoughts, that's prayer. And that is real. So, Deborah, when you were talking about the spirits, and you also mentioned something about when a person is getting ready to cross over, did you ever feel that it was your time, it was time for you to cross over?
I never felt like I was going to cross over more in my life than that night. I believe that there is a very thin veil, and I believe that, that veil had been parted for me to glimpse into another dimension that is very, very real, where we as people, as humans on the planet, every day are divinely protected by many, many things. Excuse me. I believe that we are divinely connected. It's not surprising to me that I had a lot of prayer power on my side, because in my normal everyday life, before I ever had this near-death experience, I am a person who does pray, and I don't pray just for my loved ones and my friends, and I pray for everybody on the planet. And every day I pray for divine protection over every man, boy, woman, girl. I mean, because in parts of our earth, people are being unnecessarily persecuted and killed, and horrible things are happening. And so I'm constantly praying for divine protection for all of us on the planet. And I pray five things. I pray for people's salvation. If they need to be saved from some tyrant or some domestic situation they don't need to be in, or even some job maybe they might be trapped in, I pray for healing. I want people to be healed. If I could have a pick of what I'd like to be on earth, I'd like to be a healer. I would like to be able to go lay hands on people, and I've done it ever since I'm 20-something years old. Whenever I hear of people being sick in the hospital or at home, I go over and I anoint their bodies with oil and I pray. I've stood, I know, by the outside of two caskets praying for the people that were in those two caskets, because I didn't think they were young enough. They were too young to die, and so I was asking for them to come back to life. I've had that much faith. And not only that, but I pray for everyone's deliverance. Like, whatever you're in, if you need to be delivered from something, addictions or fears or just worry, whatever. And so I'm praying this every day, universally. And then I always pray, and my last part of my prayer is that we would have abundance and prosperity, everyone. Because I believe that's the original plan. And so it's
right.
Like I'm just wanting everyone to have a blessed life, and I want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of, like, mm-hmm. ushering that type of a kingdom, if you want to use a word for a lack of a better term. I would love to see the kingdom of love just be totally in operation here, and no more death, no more mm-hmm. pain, no more hardship,
right.
you know.
So, Deborah, after this night where you had this, visit from the angels and from spirit, did things turn around after that happened? What changed? What happened after that visit?
Well, I believe I became more awake. I became more awake spiritually. I became more alert spiritually. I believe that now is my time. The name of the book was going to be Now is the Time, and it changed into Now is Your Time. And the little tags, it's your turn, it's your time. What changed for me is that I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that all I have is today. And so I mm-hmm. want to do today everything that I can to make this world a better place, to make myself a better person, to bring hope to people, to bring love to people, because I truly believe I'm going to say this, the only reason I believe we were created was to be loved and to love. And to me, if we just mm-hmm. go back to the origin, the very essence of why we exist, and we get that we're here to be loved and to love, then we're going to have more happiness, more contentment, more fulfillment, that we will be living more of our purpose with passion, that all the gifts and all the greatness and all the talents inside of us will be utilizing them more. Because I believe mm-hmm. a lot of us, like me, myself, we have talents. I've been a writer all my life. But have ever published anything? No, because I think I was believing lies. Oh, it's too hard to get published. Oh, it's too hard this, it's too hard. Oh, you're not good enough. And to me, that's really all lies. It's just bad programming, because mm-hmm. I believe we are mm-hmm. capable. Anything we can conceive, we can achieve it. You know,
absolutely.
We can do all kinds of things. We just need to give ourselves the freedom and give ourselves the green light to just say, you know what, it is my time. Now is my time.
Right.
It is my turn.
Now, Deborah, when the doctors came in the next day, had there been a change?
I steadily increased in health. I was released to a step-down unit after 10 days. I was let go after, you know, I was, yes. I mean, they don't want to say miracle, you know, but mm-hmm. you can see by them coming in and looking at the charts and looking at everything that I had a definite turnaround, that the direction mm-hmm. I was going in, which was death, it turned back to life, you know, so.
Well, you know, it's a fabulous story, Deborah. It just... that most of us certainly don't want to experience, but
right.
I'm sure that it is that moment that for you makes your life more meaningful.
It did.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It really does.
Now, Deborah,
for
those that are listening out there real quick, if someone's listening and they'd like for you to speak to their group, maybe come out to their church, talk to an organization, how could they reach out to you to talk to you more about speaking or getting a copy of your book?
Right now, they can just contact me via phone through my phone number, 931-982-2226. I am in North Dallas. I have an office in Plano, Texas. They can reach me at my office. They can reach me through email. My email is pretty simple. D as in Deborah, my last name Fisher, F-I-S-C-H-E-R, 12652 at AOL. I get on my email every morning to check it. I'm also on Facebook. I'm using my author name, Devorah Power. Power is my maiden name, Deborah. Devorah is Hebrew for Deborah. Devorah Power is my author name. My publicist and I will be posting the book on Amazon. And also when we do this, I don't have the exact date yet, but any person that has Kindle will be able to download the book for free. And so you'll be able to get the book through Amazon, or, you know, you can call me, and if you're local in Texas, we can meet for coffee and I'll give you an autographed copy. Or, you know, you can just email me and, you know, we'll figure out the details. And I would love for everyone to have my book. I pray that it blesses people and gives them hope. I know when my parents passed, when my sister passed in 2012 at an early age, I, of course, wanted the peace to know that they were in the right place. And I believe that night as I pressed to see over the angels' shoulders and between their shoulders, I saw two young women, and I truly believe it was my mom and my sister. Because the entire time of the rest of my time after that vision, I was so missing my mom. I was like, I just wanted her there so bad. But the sense was that she was, that our our families that go on are present in a way that they're there. We can't see them, but they're like our cheerleaders. They are there, encouraging us and loving on us and always sending us great vibration.
And Deborah, it's such a great gift that you would offer your book for free. So, folks, what I would suggest that you do is to follow her on Facebook. Follow her under her author name, which is Devorah. That's D apostrophe V-O-R-A Power. So, again, that's Devorah, D apostrophe V-O-R-A, and her last name Power. That's her author name. Be sure to follow her because you'll find out when the book is going to be available on Kindle and when it's on Amazon so that you can go out and get your copy of that. Thank you very much for that. And everybody, be sure that you take advantage of that. It's a beautiful story, and I think that it supports the fact that this isn't everything. It gives us hope that there's more than just what we see today.
Yeah.
And Deborah, thank you so much for sharing this with us today and for sharing your experience. And I know that there are listeners that will find great comfort in your story. And so I appreciate you sharing that, being brave enough to share that.
Thank you, Linda. It was a privilege and an honor to do that. I hope that this has been a blessing. And to those who are facing some pretty hard life situations, I just want to encourage you to live each day in total love of yourself and others around you and enjoy every moment with happiness and freedom. And just know that when it comes your time to pass over, it's going to be a very beautiful experience, and you will be beautifully welcomed.
Very good. Very good. Thank you so much for that. So now we're down to those last three questions. And these are the three questions that I ask all of my guests, and it's so very interesting, the different answers that I get. So are you ready for the last three questions?
Sure.
Okay, so here we go. When faced with obstacles, what's kept you going?
The main thing that kept me going was that my eldest granddaughter, I have seven grandchildren, was pregnant for her first time, and we knew it was a boy, and I wanted to meet him. I did not mm-hmm. want to leave Earth until I met Bryce. Just mm-hmm. this past weekend, Bryce's grandmother, who lives here in Thornton, Colorado, has just found out she has stage 4 lung cancer, and she's younger than me. And so today, mm-hmm. instead of Bryce being home with me while his parents were at work, his dad took him over to his mom's today, and I'm hoping I do get to meet her. But it's because now she is in great grief because she will not be able to get to see him grow up. And I think that is the hardest obstacle when faced with these hard life, this news, when this hard news comes that, you know, you might not have long to live, or even those who are left behind, when a loved one passes, it's like, how do we live on? You know, I mean, she was my rock. Mm-hmm. He was my rock. And the thing is that it's, you just have to, because the part that we're playing, we're here now, you know, to give our best to one another, to love, to receive love, because that's what it's all about.
Right. So true. So true. Very good answer there. The next question is, other than a coach, who's influenced you the most?
I think my mother. I think my mother instilled in me a communication to pray to my higher power. I remember walking to church by myself. I remember having encounters with my higher power, with my Heavenly Father, on my own. I remember a summer when I believe I was given the lesson of what peace is all about through rain. And I just believe from a very early age I had a hunger. I was raised Catholic, so I had a hunger to be a nun so that I could be a holy woman. And, of course, I did not become a nun. But I always wanted to be a divine person. I've always wanted to be holy. I always wanted to be, you know, good and holy. And I just wanted to always serve higher purpose. So.
It's clear that that is part of your life's purpose is, and just because you felt that becoming a spiritual woman back then, your thought of a spiritual woman was a nun. And it's clear that you don't have to be a nun to be a spiritual woman.
Exactly.
You know, you've lived a very wonderful spiritual life, and it sounds like you have a wonderful family that surrounds you that too support that. So, you know, that's just a wonderful thing to find what your life's path is, or your life's destiny. And you certainly have embraced that and are sharing that with others. So thanks so much. Now, the last question is there one thing you wish you had known early on that would have saved you time and money that you'd like to share with our listeners?
That's a toughie. I think that growing up, being eldest, I definitely wanted to please my parents and to have their approval. And so I believe that I made, career choices that weren't necessarily bad for me. But if I could go back in time and make, I guess, better choices, maybe more from my own mind and from my own heart, centered around my own gifts and talents that I now am claiming and realizing, I think I would have been a writer sooner. I think that I would definitely be speaking and going around the world sharing my stories, because I believe that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And, you know, I know that I'm to be serving people. And that's what brought me here to Texas. But I think if I was to give a message to someone, it would be like, search your own heart, find out who you truly are, really know what your gifts and talents are, live your passion, and just believe that, you know, everything that you have need of, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, physically, financially, it will be given to you. That's one of the messages in my book, to just be who you were created to be. Do what you believe you're supposed to be doing, and then you'll automatically have, which I'm not the creator of that. I joined up with that philosophy from someone else that I had heard that from. But since my early 20s, I have followed more inspirational, motivational, positive thinkers, thinkers that think outside the box, and, you know, realizing that I myself am a creation that can create things. I can co-create whatever if I set my heart and my mind to it.
Right. Very, very good advice there, Deborah, because I really think that many times we limit ourselves because we allow fear to stop us from tapping into our fullest potential. So I appreciate that. One more time, how can people get in touch with you to find out more about your book or speaking to their group?
The quickest way is to call me. My phone is with me 24/7. I take your call. I spend however many minutes we need to spend, and I love speaking, so I can come speak to your group. I can meet you out for coffee if you're local in Dallas, Texas. I love to travel, so if you would like me to come speak at a retreat or be a part of your retreat or be a part of your writing group, just call me, 931-982-2226. The other way is through email. We still do snail mail these days, but email is quicker. So it would just be D for Deborah, my first letter of Deborah, and then my last name, Fisher. It's F-I-S-C-H-E-R, and my birthday, 12-6-52. At AOL. Pretty easy.
Wonderful. Deborah, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to share your story. And I know that there are listeners that are listening that will be able to find comfort, even if it's just comfort knowing that a loved one that has passed is in a better place. So I so appreciate you joining us today. So thank you again.
Well, it was an honor, and it would be an honor to serve anyone that would like to reach out to me, because I definitely would love to bring comfort to your heart in any way that I could. And thanks so much for this opportunity. Wonderful. And bless you.
Absolutely. Same to you. So just be sure that you follow Deborah on Facebook, and keep your eye out for that book, and it's going to be coming out on Amazon soon. Get a hard copy, or you can take advantage of her generous offer when it comes out and download a free version. I want to thank you all for joining me today. I so appreciate you being here on Empower Radio Show, and I look forward to many more episodes in the future. And if you have any questions, or if you have a topic that you would like to see us address, be sure to email me, and that is empowerradioshow@gmail.com. Now, I got a little tricky with this because it's the letter M, the word power, radioshow@gmail.com. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.
As we close our show today, we want you to know it's time. The time is now for you to cast off the chains of mediocrity and reach for that brass ring. The time is now for taking that giant leap to start a business. Step out of your comfort zone and become the you that you've always dreamed of being. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Empower Radio Show. That's at MPOWERRADIOSHOW. Thank you for being with us today on the Empower Radio Show.